Okay, today I will be talking about a combined structural microfinance, food security, and gender empowerment intervention, and the impacts of it on new STI symptoms and diagnoses in rural Malawi. I have no relationships to disclose. These are my colleagues, the SAGE for Health Research team. And we want to pay special thanks to the study participants from the Kasungu District in Malawi and the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. Malawi is a landlocked country located in sub-Saharan Africa. It has a population of 16.5 million people and depends on an agricultural economy. 84% of the population is rural and engaged in subsistence farming. Poverty is endemic, as more than half of the population lives on less than a dollar per day, and food security is also prevalent. According to the latest Integrated Household Survey, 49% of Malawian households faced food shortages in the year preceding the survey. And finally, Malawi bears a high HIV burden. Its prevalence rate of 10.6% is one of the highest globally, and when separated by gender, women are disproportionately affected with a 13% prevalence rate, while men have an 18% prevalence rate. Poverty, food insecurity, and gender disparity are all social determinants of HIV, and as I mentioned previously, are all present in Malawi. These factors are interrelated, and when taken together, they amplify people's vulnerability to HIV infection. The limitations of proximally focused HIV prevention interventions have been the target of increasing critique. These critiques point out the need for complex, multi-layered structural interventions to address the root causes and causal pathways linking social, economic, political, and environmental factors to HIV vulnerability. Yet to date, few studies have investigated the effects of structural interventions on HIV vulnerability. Okay. So our response to this was to develop a leveraged model linking an international NGO with academic partners to investigate a structural intervention. This type of partnership leverages the strengths of both partners. For example, in our study, we leveraged CARE Malawi's capacity to obtain funding for and implement a large-scale structural intervention with HIV researchers' capacity to obtain funding for and implement rigorous study designs and evaluations. Neither group would have been able to do everything that was involved without the other partner. The purpose of the SAGE for Health study was to rigorously evaluate a community-based, structural, multi-level health and development intervention implemented by CARE Malawi in rural Malawi to examine the mechanisms and magnitude of the impact on economic livelihoods, food security, and health. The specific aim is to examine the pathways between socioeconomic environment, food security, HIV risk behaviors, and HIV-related outcomes. Our intervention took place in the Kasungu District, which is highlighted in red here. The Kasungu District is predominantly rural. We used a quasi-experimental, non-equivalent control group study design to evaluate a poverty relief program implemented by CARE Malawi in the Kasungu District. The intervention villages were located in three traditional authorities, which are kind of like counties here in the U.S., and are represented in red on the map, so you can see here in those three authorities. These villages were chosen by CARE Malawi. The control villages, in blue on the map, were chosen from matched traditional authorities based on population characteristics and their proximity to Lilongwe, the capital of Malawi. The poverty relief program being evaluated was called SAFE, Support to Able-Bodied Vulnerable Groups to Achieve Food Security. The SAFE intervention consisted of four components: farmer field schools, where a total of 9,000 households received education on sustainable agricultural practices; village savings and loans, 443 village savings and loans were formed; and HIV, AIDS, and gender empowerment education as well as capacity building of local governance, were mainstream within the farmer field schools and village savings and loan meetings. The SAFE intervention was implemented by CARE from 2008 to 2010. To measure the intervention effects, we collected longitudinal data from 600 SAFE intervention households and 300 control households. Data was collected at three time points: baseline, 18 months, and 36 months. We also did randomized community surveys of 1,000 households who did not receive the SAFE intervention. 500 of those households were located in the intervention area, and 500 of those households were located in the control area. This was to account for circumstances other than the intervention effects that may have influenced change over time. The randomized community surveys were collected at baseline and 36 months. Finally, to further understand the intervention effects, we conducted qualitative interviews and focus groups at 18 months. For this analysis, we looked at sexually transmitted infections, or STIs, because the presence of STIs increases HIV transmission through increased susceptibility and increased infectiousness. According to the CDC, individuals who are infected with STIs are as much as 2 to 5 times more likely than uninfected individuals to acquire HIV infection if they are exposed to the virus through sexual contact. If an HIV-infected individual is also infected with another STI, that person is more likely to transmit HIV through sexual contact than other HIV-infected individuals. Therefore, controlling the spread of STIs is critical in reducing the spread of HIV in Malawi. Oh, let's get that out of there. There we go. For this analysis, for our data analysis, we used the longitudinal data collected from the intervention participants and control participants. We assessed three self-report outcomes: STI diagnosis at baseline, which is defined as clinician diagnosed with either 1 of 5 STIs at baseline; new STI symptoms, defined as reporting 1 of 6 STI symptoms at 18 months or 36 months; new STI diagnosis, which was clinician diagnosed with either 1 of 5 STIs at 18-month or 36-month follow-up. We used chi-square tests to analyze the categorical variables and logistic regressions to examine the intervention effect on new STI symptoms and new STI diagnosis. STI diagnosis at baseline was assessed by asking, which of the following infections has a clinician ever diagnosed you as having? Among the 5 STIs assessed, syphilis, chlamydia, HPV, herpes, or gonorrhea, syphilis was actually the one that was reported most commonly. The prevalence rate was 5.3% at baseline. We also looked at the overall prevalence of being diagnosed with any STI, and that was 15.8%. For the next two self-report outcomes, the questions were, have you ever had any of the following symptoms, and which one of the following infections has the clinician ever diagnosed you as having? To account for the way that the question was asked, our operational definition of new STI symptoms or new STI diagnosis was if they reported no at baseline and yes at 18 months. This would indicate a new symptom, STI symptom, or a new STI diagnosis between baseline and 18 months. If they reported no at baseline, no at 18 months, or yes at 36 months, this would indicate a new STI symptom between 18 and 16 months, or a new STI diagnosis. And then to examine the cumulative cases, we looked at those who answered no at baseline and yes at either 18 or 36 months. Therefore, anyone who reported yes at baseline to ever having an STI symptom or STI diagnosis was not included in this analysis. And before getting into the results, I should note that there are no statistically significant results between baseline and 18 months. In our first figure, you can see that the intervention is represented in orange and the control in gray. This will be consistent throughout all of the figures from now on. Keep in mind that the individuals in these groups reported no to an STI at baseline, STI symptoms at baseline. The first column represents new STI symptoms between baseline and 18 months. The second set of columns represents a new STI symptom reported between 18 and 36 months. And then the third column represents new STI symptoms over the entire 36-month period. So as we can see, compared to the control group, the intervention group was less likely to report having new STI symptoms at 36 months, controlling for symptoms presented at 18 months. This holds true for intervention men as well. Compared to men in the control group, men in the intervention group were less likely to report having new STI symptoms at 36 months, controlling for symptoms presented at 18 months. And it also holds true for women in the intervention group. Compared to women in the control group, women in the intervention group were less likely to report having new STI symptoms at 36 months, controlling for new symptoms at 18 months. Although not statistically significant, compared to the control, participants in the intervention group were more likely to report a new STI diagnosis at 36 months, controlling for new STI diagnosis at 18 months. So the intervention group had more reported STI diagnosis at 36 months. This was consistent as well when looking only at the men in the intervention group. So compared to the control, men in the intervention group reported higher STI diagnosis, 36 months. And this is consistent with females as well in the intervention group compared to the control. Therefore, we could conclude as a result of a combined structural microfinance, food security, and gender empowerment intervention, rural Malawian households have a decreased likelihood of reporting STI symptoms and may have had an increased likelihood of reporting STI diagnoses. This combined structural intervention appears to have contributed to a decrease in the likelihood of newly presented STI symptoms, coupled with a greater increase in the likelihood of new STI diagnosis. This could mean that the intervention contributed to an increase in STI testing and a decrease in undiagnosed STIs in the intervention group. The decrease in the likelihood of new STI symptoms and potential decrease in undiagnosed STIs may have tempered HIV vulnerability in rural central Malawi. And the prevalence of syphilis, which is not yet reported in the Malawi DHS, may be an STI of concern as well in Malawi. Finally, there were some limitations to our study. First, we used self-report measures to assess new STI symptoms and diagnoses, and no STI testing was conducted. Secondly, the wording of the self-report questions, ever having a symptom or ever being diagnosed, limited our analysis to new symptoms and new diagnoses. Third and finally, while a randomized control trial would have improved the internal validity of our study, the quasi-experimental design balanced internal and external validity and fit into the established NGO mode of operation. So we recommend the following: more HIV prevention and treatment research that examines structural interventions in order to better understand the pathways linking environmental factors to HIV vulnerability, as well as collaboration across sectors to understand the impact of large-scale, multi-level structural interventions on HIV, and finally, that we keep in mind the potential impact of STI prevention in the context of HIV prevention. Thank you. Sure.
So what I'll do is take one or two questions now, and then we'll have a Q&A session at the end. So Would anybody like to ask a question? Yes, please. Would you just say who you are as well, so we know? Yeah.
Well, the intervention was implemented by CARE Malawi, so an international NGO. It's CARE International, but it's a country office in Malawi. And the intervention was 18 months long. So I think one of the things we were looking at was a way, if we found out if this was working, then the international NGO would be able to kind of adapt and then take that into their next kind of funding opportunities. And so it's almost sustainability in the way that they will learn kind of what worked from the intervention and then be able to apply that to their next intervention that they were going to implement, because they are always focused on poverty reduction in Malawi. So kind of taking what they learned here and then hopefully keeping the stuff that worked and then maybe getting rid of the stuff that didn't work, and then that would kind of go with the sustainability factor. Does that make some sense? The exact activities? Well, I can give you a couple of examples. I'll go back to the... So one of the things they did in the farmer field schools, I know, were they did these kind of practice. So they would take a acre of land and they would plant all different kinds. They would use different planting techniques. And they would show the farmers all the different planting techniques. And then as the season would go on, the farmers could come out and inspect and say which one they thought was best, and hopefully they've learned that technique and then take it and apply it in their farm. Or they would do some crops diversification. So it was very much a kind of learning as you see it kind of develop, and then hopefully you would take that and then bring whatever you thought was best back to your own farm. And then the village savings and loans were just microfinance groups, so women who would get together and pool their money and then loan, basically give each other loans that then they would pay back to the group. The HIV education and gender empowerment was, the education was mainstream within those farmer field schools and then also within those village savings and loan meetings. So they would not only get together to do the kind of loan management, but then they'd also talk about things like HIV as well.
Can I just ask one about the? Did you obviously it's a big research piece. Was there any other outcomes that you were looking at as well? Not such as health, but in other.
Oh yes. Well, they're looking at food security.
Yeah.
They're looking using also anthropometric measures. We're looking at socioeconomic outcomes. We're looking at. All HIV as well as other health. I mean, there are kind of like domestic violence, women's empowerment indicators. I think there are 23 modules total that we looked at. So HIV and like sexual risk-taking behaviors as well as STIs are some of them, but there are several. Yeah, we haven't come out with the outcomes paper yet, soon. But like this past summer, Pat Stevens did a presentation on, it was resiliency to economic shocks. So looking at how, if they were part of this intervention, they were better able to kind of absorb those shocks, like environmentally, ones that are environmentally, related to environmental factors like drought, things like that, or a loss in the family. So that was a good outcome I know so far. So they had that kind of better resiliency to those. They could respond better. And I know there are a few others, so I'll have to ask them. But yeah, I mean, we're working on the outcomes paper now, and there'll be others too, since there's so many different things that we looked at.